Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us. Today on the show, we're going to talk a little about improving your drainage and doing some tiling in crop, not before the crop's planted, not after the crop's harvested, but literally as the crop is growing out in the field. Now, that might sound crazy to you, but we're going to explain that as we go throughout the show today. If you've got any questions for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about that's happening on your farm, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhDMedia, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag pretty quick here, but let me just say this to open the show. With this whole tile thing, you may be in an area where everything's pattern tiled, drainage is perfect, and this is not a big issue to you. But I would just say, even in those areas, sometimes there are repairs that need to get done. There are a few tile lines that need to get added. And then we get to other areas of the country where we don't see a lot of drain tile. So, for example, Missouri, South Dakota, North Dakota. There are a lot of states out there where there are major drainage issues, at least for a while. Now, like South Dakota and North Dakota, part of the reason why more tiling hasn't been done there over the years is really because a lot of guys look at it and they go, well, I'm only wet for a month in the spring. Yep, I agree with that. Most years you are only wet for a month in the spring. But here's the problem with it. That month in the spring is absolutely critical. It is crazy. If you start digging around at your little plants that are 2 weeks after planting, 3 weeks after planting, look at how massive the root system below that can be. It's crazy. I mean, sometimes you can have a 2 foot deep root in 3 weeks, even in our area where the temperature is only getting to a high of 60 degrees most days. It doesn't take long. But the problem is roots are not going to grow into a water table. And if your water table is high for even a couple weeks in the spring, that's terrible. Because not only do you kill off your roots, or at least parts of your roots, but you kill off a lot of the beneficial microbes. Reading any farm magazine over the last 5 years, the number one topic, soil health. That's number one. So yes, there are a lot of ways that people will approach that. It's organic, it's no-till, it's strip-till, it's cover crops. But the underlying theme here is all soil health. I can promise you, you will not have a healthy soil if your water table comes up too high for more than a day. If your water table's up, what happens is it pushes out all the air. And in order for roots to live, for beneficial microbes to live, just for your soil to be alive, it's got to have air. With no air, it dies. Now you've got a major problem, not just for today, but for the long term. So anyway, the whole tiling thing we just think is tremendous, and I speak passionately about this all the time because of how it has literally transformed our farm. In 2007, before we bought our first tile plow then, we had roughly 35 fields that we were farming. We could only farm three of them straight through. Three out of 35. That was it. It was terrible. We were constantly getting stuck and pulling equipment apart. We're going back, having to replant. Our soil was unhealthy and headed the wrong direction. It was just a nightmare. Farming was not fun. Since we put tile in the ground, farming's fun again. It's awesome. Our yields keep going up. Soil keeps getting better. Things are great. Even last year, we had the worst flooding that the state of South Dakota has ever seen. We planted every acre. We planted every acre because it was tiled. And, I mean, right next to us, where it wasn't tiled in neighboring fields, went unplanted for the most part. Or yield was terrible. Or they had tremendous green snap. So, I mean, it just makes such a difference in years like that. But even in normal years, even in drier years, even in the drought year of 2012, we saw our best yields, guess where? Right over the tile lines. Because the roots were able to get deeper earlier in the spring. And then when the drought hit in the summer, we had the deepest roots. And that allowed us to raise great crop. So anyway, we'll talk about how to do this in your crop after the crop's up, without totally destroying the crop or anything, as we go throughout the show today. But first, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, Brian, you know, I'm amazed that we're going to get to anything besides just the tiling talk today, but we'll give it a shot here as long as we can. We got a question from Matt that came in, and he said, I'm wanting to know if Freelex will damage the new grass that I overseeded early right before a springtime snow. I'm in the state of Iowa, and I'm taking care of a lawn for someone else here, and I'm not seeing any new growth just yet. But I don't want to see weeds, and I don't want to have trouble taking care of it all year. How soon could I spray the Freelex?
Okay, so Freelex is the new 2,4-D. So I don't care if you're spraying new 2,4-D, old 2,4-D. Any 2,4-D is probably going to damage tiny little plants if you spray them just as they are coming out of the ground. They are not nearly as tolerant as the established plants. So it's not something that for me would probably hold me back, and here's why. When you go out and raise a crop, let's say it's corn or soybeans, you don't want to kill 10% of the plants. You don't even want to damage 10% of the plants. But if it's a lawn, who cares? You kill 10%, heck, even if you kill 50% of the plants, so what? You still have plenty of other grass that's coming, and in the meantime, you killed your weeds. So if it was me, I don't think I'd worry about it. I'd go kill the weeds, and then if I got to seed some more grass, I'd seed a little more grass. That's how I would do it. But yes, if you want to avoid any damage, your best bet is go out and hand pull those weeds.
All right, thanks for that question. I got this one in from Emil, who says, this winter, I think you mentioned dual for grass control in winter wheat. Just wondering what your guideline would be and considerations about timing.
Dual in winter wheat?
Well, didn't mention dual, but we did say there's a group 15 Zidua that's labeled.
That's like dual.
Same chemical family. Dual is not labeled, right. But Zidua is. You could put it on delayed pre or more likely early post to get residual grass control. Yes. It's not going to burn down grasses that are up. So don't use dual, but you can use Zidua. That would be an option that is labeled. Thanks for that question. We appreciate that as well. Listening to Ag PhD Radio, we're going to talk about in-crop tiling today, but also take your agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from Agra US is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
We started utilizing the Dual React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips. So you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, our topic is tiling in crop. Obviously, that takes equipment to get that done. We've got our friend Mitch Kaiser with us right now with Case IH to help us out. Mitch, how are you doing today?
Doing terrific. Yeah, it's a great day. Sun's out and it's starting to warm up here in Wisconsin.
Well, we need some warm weather, need some sunshine in a lot of the country right now. And it does help with the tiling, too. When we've got some of this ground that's a little wet and a little bit sticky, we're getting a lot of questions about, all right, you guys want us to tile in crop. How do we get traction? How much horsepower is it going to take? There's just a big list of questions, Mitch.
Okay.
So when you think about that, let's just start with traction. How do you get traction and get good horsepower going to pull that plow through those areas?
Absolutely. Especially for in row with our Steiger row crop tractors and our road tracks, we're able to drop into the rows with 18-inch tracks, 21-inch tracks, and run right into the ground in between the rows and get that traction, because it will put more traction to the ground with single tracks than dual tires. And the other thing that it amplifies, that the track will lay out a more tread pattern lengthwise. So you're putting that traction down and you're only getting about 1 to 2% slip with mounted tile plows that we run last spring and fall, and then again this spring. So it's worked very well. And then when you couple that traction with the power of the CVX drive transmission we have, which is an infinite variable transmission, you can get down to that 3 feet per minute if you need to. And the transmission will dictate the speed. So you set the speed at what you want to lay the tile into the ground at. And we've seen no more than 2, maybe 3% slip, which gives you that traction, but also that exact speed you need to lay in the tile.
Yeah, it makes a big difference when you can do that. And you mentioned 3 feet per minute. I was thinking that's probably about my speed in the 40-yard dash. But, you know, when you're pulling that tile plow through, you're not moving very fast, and you need it to be very accurate so you don't have bounces and skips and ups and downs with your tile line.
And that's the advantage of our Rotrac Steigers, because you have no power hop. You don't get that bouncing up and down. You can transfer that power to the track. You don't have to worry about air pressure naturally. And laying it down puts an even tread on the soil profile. And with 4 tracks running, front and rear, we also offer automatic diff locks. So those diff locks are locked in all the time when you're even going around a slight curve or a bend, or for sure when you're going straight. So you're getting 4 traction, all 4 tracks equally, to put that traction to the ground. And that's where it also gives you the nice level grade you need to put in the tile.
You know, you get a lot of questions, Mitch, and gosh, the last couple of years have been pretty interesting ones to be out in the field for sure. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things this spring that you're seeing that the growers are struggling with and that you're helping them out with?
I think the big thing we're seeing is, again, everybody's in for trying to get the crop in real early this year compared to what happened last year. They decided to go in as early as they could, as soon as the ground showed any signs of warmth at all. And with the special seed coatings, been doing that. And we've seen guys go into more tracks to get the traction on the ground earlier. We've seen where they'll try to plant with our seed up in Canada, especially with a big wheel, four-wheel drive tractor, and they'll get stuck, where they'll be able to go through the fields with tracks and keep on running to stay on top. So we've seen that trend continue again with more 4-track on the Case IH side, the quad tracks and the road tracks in the spring operations.
Yeah, if you wanted to have some challenging years to run equipment, well, we have had those, and we're certainly see some differences having the right equipment out there in the field. We're talking with Mitch Kaiser with Case IH. Mitch, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here the rest of the spring.
You too. Thanks, and have a good year. Appreciate it.
You got Derek Ellingson with us right now with Ellingson Water Management up in North Dakota. Derek, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
Good. I'm amazed you even have a free minute to talk. I just look at all the tiling projects that have been going in your region. It's just been crazy here the last couple of years, and certainly this spring in North Dakota, we're seeing growers, and I should say in the Dakotas and Minnesota, seeing growers wanting to put some tile in crop. When you get those kind of calls, what are some of the things that you would advise for growers?
Yeah, we are, guys. You know, we've been pretty blessed here for 2020 with the backlog that we're picking up. And that's always a contentious topic to talk about, styling in crop. And we visit with guys, all the time. And, there's really not a lot to discuss. It's just really, you know, understanding, you know, really what are the repercussions of that. And I always tell guys, you know, our windows are so limited. And with this day and age with our employees and trying to retain them and keeping them busy and covering costs, you know, we always are looking for that summer work. And, you know, obviously the preventive plant is always right up there in possibilities for certain areas, the demographics and geographics of the rainfall event, which we're experiencing up here right now. It's been raining for pretty much solid the last 30 hours. But, you know, we've done a lot of jobs through the field, guys. We've tiled right through potatoes. You know, we've had guys just offset the planter and leave a 10-foot swath and went in, and he was able to reap the benefits of that drain tile on that potato farm. So,
you know, you mentioned that. The sooner we get tile in the ground, the sooner we start reaping these benefits. And like in those prevent plant acres and acres guys have had a tough time getting into, it is a great opportunity to do these things. Brian and I look at our own farm and some of the spots that we have done some tiling in crop. Most of the time, if we need the tile in the bad areas of the field, we really aren't giving up a whole lot of crop by doing some digging.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. You know, the guys are target tiling or whatever, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, 160 acre grid tiling going on through the crop, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, if you're going to tile on 60-foot centers or whatever the spacing is you choose, you know, 20 acres, you're talking 3.5 to 4 acres of damage. You know, with the technology today, the GPS, the onboard reels, you know, we mitigate that loss and keep it as small as possible, minimal. And then we offset that with some discounts. You know, we offer up discounts for summer tiling through the crop, and, you know, that can translate back into, you know, pay themselves $300, you know, an acre minimum for that damage that was done on them acres. So it's not as, sometimes, like I say, as contentious as I would, some guys take it out, and then the what if, right? You know, how do you reap that benefit? You get that wet year. You know, what's that payoff look like for a farmer?
Absolutely. I know we talk a lot on our farm about getting the main lines in. And once you got the mains in, you can always run some more laterals to it down the road. Talk to us about these mains that you're putting in. You've got some flat country that you work in, Derek. And is there ground that you just can't tile, or it just takes a little bit more work and a little bit more planning to make it happen?
No, that's right. You know, obviously, I don't know if we found any ground yet that we can't tile. You know, the different installation methods, obviously looking at your spacing, soil type, whether you need fabric, not on it, high water table sand, you know, there's always ways. It's just really goes about your pre-planning and making sure that you're taking the right steps to get that in. You know, I've went into clay that's so dense that we've got specialty boots that we got to bed in rock to get some infiltration. So, I mean, we've developed different technologies to basically accommodate about any soil that's out there and try and reclaim some of them areas for guys.
Well, certainly a lot of challenges out in fields right now, getting the drainage work started now when you have some time, is a great opportunity to improve your fields. I've been talking with Derek Ellingson here with Ellingson Water Management. Derek, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
You're welcome. Thanks, guys.
When we think about tiling in crop, this is certainly something we've done a lot of on our own farm. And the one benefit, too, that we really haven't pressed on is you got longer days. We have nice long sunshine days, hopefully, coming. It's a little cloudy today, but in general, we have more daylight and we have warmer temps, and that helps us as well to get things done. We're going to talk more about the tiling in crop. Also, take more of your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Hey, Bill. any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up seed treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPHD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're talking tiling today. Imagine that. Brian is actually letting me get a word in edgewise. It's amazing. He normally, if he gets on the tiling topic, it's hours that could go by. But today we welcome your questions, your calls. If you want to talk about tiling on your own farm or something else, 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Bruce Van Dyken on with us right now from Minnesota. Bruce, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thanks.
All right, we're talking tiling in crop, and what does that mean to you?
Well, as a contractor, it can mean a couple things for me. I think, and it can mean positive things for the customer also. If you have a small tiling job, I see two advantages, I guess, to tiling in crop. The first one would be, let's face it, I guess small tiling jobs don't make a whole lot of money. And so if you want to get a little higher up on the list, offer an opportunity to tile in a season where tiling can be a little bit slower.
Absolutely.
So second opportunity, I guess, I see is that contractors, I know we do, but probably some others do too, is offer discounts for crop rundown. So if they're going to tile in crops, we'll give like a 2% discount just because we're running down crops. So that also makes it help offset the cost a little bit.
Yeah, I've talked to a number of contractors over the years, and it seems like you're right. There's generally a big list of guys that would like them to come, but everybody wants them to come at the exact same time of the year, and we normally just don't get a whole lot of fall weather that allows everybody to get their stuff done. So spreading that workload out a little bit helps. So talk to me about that. You say crop rundown, but not a huge discount. So you aren't really anticipating to run down a whole lot of crop.
No. We have an onboard tile stringer on our plow, so we make one track through, and we usually track right back down where we came from. There's usually minimal damage.
You know, do you find more growers just looking at, can you get my mains in right now, or is it problem area solving that you're working on, or do you actually do some pattern tiling even in crop?
We haven't done too much pattern tiling in crop recently. We do find that guys will let us come in and put mains in, which is a nice advantage too, since mains can generally take a longer time to get put in. If they give us some time to do it in the summer, that's great. And then you can really go to town when you hit the fall.
Yeah, that's for sure. And you know, when you think about maintenance issues too, what about that? And are you finding a lot of tiling maintenance issues as you get going during the season?
Yeah, certainly. You end up with, in the summer, we end up doing more maintenance stuff because the spring season, we're really pushed to get the tile in the ground. We usually push off our any of the maintenance stuff and repairs to the summer. And generally, guys will let you go right in the crop then. Those areas kind of show up in the spring, too, for people where you have a crushed tile or a problem with a root plug or something like that. So,
when you think about some of these things, crushed tile, I guess, would be one thing, but do you find growers could avoid problems with using more slope or bigger lines? What are some of the things that you'd say you've picked up over the last few years?
I would say don't be afraid to upsize your tile. We've got tile that we've tried hooking into or had to look at in recent years that is just way overloaded. And the idea of getting along with your neighbor and getting together and putting in a large main and a system that can handle more tiling for 25, 30 years to come is always a wise idea, I think, because doing it after the fact is just a little more challenging for the contractor and can end up with problems with cut tiles and tiles that didn't get hooked up. And so, yeah, start big. Start big. I know it can be a little more costly up front, but you'll never regret it.
Yep, I agree with you 100% there. Bruce Van Dyken, contractor in Minnesota, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Let's head out to Illinois. We've got Dr. Jeremy Miners with us right now with Agrum. Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Brian and Darren. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Hope you guys are well.
Yeah, we're doing just fine. I know we've got some tiling projects out there. As soon as it quits raining here, we're going to get back out in the field and doing it. Do you see a big difference working on the tile in the summer versus the fall, or do you see any challenges with doing it right now in crop?
That's a great question. So generally speaking, when we're thinking about when we want to put tile in the ground, you want to have the conditions that soil so it's not under saturation. And otherwise, it leads to problems like potentially compaction or smearing of the sides and other difficulties like getting stuck, as you had mentioned previously in your program. The summer months are actually a great time to be putting the tile in because the soil conditions are just, they're going to tend to be better than what we experience during our wetter periods of season, which would be fall and spring.
Yeah, I agree with you. We typically have some better conditions, or at least we have the opportunity to get into some of those better conditions than we do when we limit ourselves to, hey, here's this 2 to 4 week time period where we're going to try and get everything done, and it may or may not work out very well for us. You know, I guess one of the things that Bruce Van Dyken just brought up is just longevity. When we're doing these projects, how long should we really anticipate them to last in our soils? And hopefully you say something that's really, really, really long, because it was a lot of work putting our tile in the first time, hoping not to have to do it again.
Absolutely. So, you know, that is a question I get all the time. And unfortunately, I don't have an answer in terms of how long it's going to last. Because if we think about it empirically, plastic tile has only been around since the 1970s. And the lifespan on that plastic tile could be 100 years. So as long as it's being installed correctly and those conditions are good, which gets back to the advantage of doing it in summer, or periods when you're not under that saturation, I mean, it easily could last a lifetime.
Yeah, I think so too. We've looked at tile projects that have been done, yeah, close to 50 years ago, and wow, if you've got enough slope, if you've got big enough lines, if you're making sure to keep those outlets open and avoid problems there, we see pretty nice longevity out there. What are some of the questions that you're getting, Jeremy, about tiling?
So we get all types of questions. Probably the most common questions we're getting now, of course, is longevity is one of those questions. We get a lot of questions in terms of what our thoughts are in terms of this new flexible dual wall that's come out, which is a pretty good development in terms of being able to install smooth wall style tile rapidly. But probably the biggest question we get nowadays is the use of cover crops with tile. And in particular, if we're going to see any type of risk of those cover crops getting in and clogging that tile system over time.
Has it influenced the depth then? Or are you putting them in at 4 feet instead of 3 feet or something like that in cover crop operations? Or what kind of adjustments would you make?
That's a great question. And honestly, I don't think we've had enough experience yet throughout the Midwest in terms of what the long-term effect of those cover crops are going to be on the tile. The main argument that is considered now is that when those cover crops, if those roots do accumulate in there, is this going to be like your corn roots? They're already getting down to where your tile is already, and then it will be flushed out over time. And the risk, not necessarily in terms of depth, would be getting back to that installation and making sure that installation is done right to begin with, and you don't have a bobble that would, say, collect those tile or those roots within the tile. And again, that kind of gets back to the subject of your program, which is having those good conditions for when you're doing your installation.
Absolutely, it makes such a difference. Talking to Dr. Jeremy Miners with Agrum. Jeremy, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. And stay safe and have a great spring. Oh, darn. I'm having a terrible day today cutting people off. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We'll be right back.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operations.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Revitech fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitech fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
It came in waves, ruthlessly eliminating the new spectrum of hard-to-kill grassy weeds in wheat. Everest 3.0 herbicide. A new formulation makes it brutal on yellow foxtail, foxtail barley, and other tough grasses. Everest 3.0 gets the weeds you see and the ones you know are coming, with flush-after-flush control. Ask your retailer about Everest 3.0. Wave after wave of grassy weed domination. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio today. If you've got a question for us, it's 844-44-AG-PHD or email us radio@agphd.com. We'll get back to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a minute. Before we do, I'm going to sum up our topic today, which is tiling in crop. I got four things. First, the sooner you get tile in, the sooner it pays. All I can tell you is we just picked up some new ground, and this is literally like the first thing I want done. And I told our guys, I don't care if we plant the crop first, we don't plant it first, whatever. We just have to get tile in this spring. The sooner it gets in the ground, then the quicker we're reaping the rewards. So many times in the past when we have tiled in crop, what we have found is we actually gain yield. We don't lose yield from destroying crop. We gain yield because right away we're getting the benefits of we've lowered the water table. And by the way, we also reduce erosion. So I talk all the time about how tiling is fantastic for the environment. You reduce erosion, you have cleaner water downstream, you have less flooding, fewer road issues. I mean, healthier soil. You use more water in total in the field because your yields are higher. There's so many great things about tile. The sooner you get it in, the better. Okay, that's number one. Number two, when you're tiling in crop, you have more heat, you have more sun, you have more traction in June versus November, or let's call it May versus November. November stinks. Yep, I've tiled a bunch in November, and our guys in the farm have tiled a whole bunch in November. You know, everybody will do it, but it's like I kind of have to force everybody to. You know what I mean? It's no fun. It's 35 degrees out there. You got to jump down in a hole with water. Some of the ground's froze already. The days are super short. It's just not fun. When you're out there in May and June, it's fun. It's 70 degrees or 80 or whatever. I mean, it's beautiful. You can start working at 6 in the morning and work till 9 o'clock at night with sunlight. It's awesome. And you rarely get stuck because you have a lot more traction. You go in November, it's tough. You're getting stuck half the time. Number three, you can tile up to, this has been what we have found anyway, you can tile up to 1 foot tall corn with no yield damage to speak of. So tiling up to the time the corn or the soybeans are a foot tall, I feel pretty comfortable with that. I really do. Now, granted, if we've got a tremendous amount of tiling to do out there, and this is my fourth point, you don't have to pattern tile in crop. You can at least put the main lines in, at least put, you know, where you're going to gain the most from the tile, put those lines in. And then in the fall, then you can go fill in just a few other lines. It's no big deal to fill in a few other ones. But get the main ones in right now. So
on our farm, we've got a lot of rolling hills. We have some where we have to pattern tile and some we have to put in a lot of tile. We just did some yesterday, in fact. We broke up 16 acres of pasture. We're going to crop farm it. And we went 30-foot spacings in the low ground, which was half the field. And in the other, we just ran a few lines. It was no big deal. But if you're out in the field, you're only pulling one shank. That's it. You're not pulling a shank every 30 inches or anything. So when people ask me about, well, aren't you going to rip the crop up? I go, not really. I'm driving my tractor down little crop, and the crop's going to recover pretty good. I'm only pulling one shank, so it's no real big deal, especially if I'm just spot tiling. I'm just going in the worst areas. I'm just putting in a few main lines or something like that. So I just really encourage you, take a look at getting some tiling done in crop early in the season. Now, if we get late in the season, that's a different deal, and you really have to truly destroy crop. But I'm talking about early in the season when the crop is a foot tall or less. So like on our farm, usually for us, that means we can do tiling in crop in corn until the first week of June, and we can usually tile in soybeans for a couple weeks after that. So I feel, you know, pretty good about it most years when we're out there tiling in crop. And fortunately now we're getting a lot of these things done. That's the other big thing that I'll leave you with. It's a one-time deal. You're just putting that tile in once in your lifetime and you're done. So the sooner you get it done, the better off you are. The sooner you're going to start paying off the tile. Tile pays. Oh, I guess I do have one last statement that I'll leave you with. So for Darren and me, our dad passed away last year. But I talked to him many times about drain tile because he was originally from Iowa. We farm in South Dakota. They had a lot more rain in Iowa, heavier ground, flatter ground. Everything was pattern tiled where he came from. And he just said, Brian, you know, in my whole life, I've heard farmers, I am a farmer. He goes, I talk to farmers all the time about, oh, I spent too much money on this, and the farmer's complaining about that and this and everything else. But he said, you know, the one thing that I've never in my life heard a guy talk negative about, not once, he said, tile. He said, in fact, most farmers are going to say, I didn't spend enough money on tile. I didn't put enough in the ground. So he said, I've never run into a farmer yet who said, I spent too much money on tile or I put in too much tile. Tile pays. All right, Darren, let's get back to mailbag.
All right, we get a question from Larry in northwestern Ohio. He said, Ohio State's done a lot of micronutrient trials over the years and rarely shown a yield increase.
It's because their yields have been terrible. Go ahead.
I've got a dealer who's recommending I put on 5 to 8 pounds of dry boron on my sandy 5 to 10 CEC soil. My boron levels are 0.2 to 0.4, which is low to very low. Do you think I should go ahead and put some on early? Should I wait till the crop is up, test, and foliar feed later?
Okay, so I want to come back to my statement, and I'm not trying to bash Ohio State or any farmer in Ohio. All I'm saying is if you look at a lot of old studies done on micronutrients, the yields have been poor. The yields just are poor overall. What we're talking about here, and you wouldn't want to have those kind of yields on your farm today in this day and age. You can't afford those kind of yields. So what we're talking about is we got to look at the whole big picture. And if the guy's short, if a farmer that I'm working with is short on NP or K, we're fixing the NP and K first. Okay, it doesn't do you a whole lot of good to go spending a bunch of money in micronutrients if you don't have NPK first. It doesn't do you a whole lot of good spending a bunch of money on micronutrients if you've got major issues with pH or sulfur or calcium. So my point is, let's look at everything. And if you are going for good yields, and I mean real good yields, so like in my area, for example, around here, the average corn yield is 160. So on our farm in the last, I don't know, 5 years, we've averaged 220. Okay, I'm going for 300 now. We've got fields that are averaging 250 plus. All right, so you see where I'm going with this. If I was averaging 160 county average, would I be really super worried about boron? Probably not, because chances are something else is my problem. It's tile, it's nitrogen or phosphorus or potassium or pH. I got major issues to fix. Okay, so fix the major issues first. But once those are fixed, then by all means, let's start working on the next thing. Boron, if you're at 0.2 or 0.4, yes, boron's affecting your corn yield. That I know for sure, if you're getting good corn yields. Now, if you're getting 100 bushel corn or 150, then maybe it isn't. Okay, but when you say 5 to 8 pounds, I assume that's 5 to 8 pounds of a boron product, not 5 to 8 pounds of actual boron. Because if you put 5 to 8 pounds of actual boron on your sandy soil, that may damage your crop. Probably will damage your crop. So I'd be a little concerned about what I'm using exactly. But if you're getting an actual, a half pound of actual or a pound of actual, that might be okay. Just use boron in moderation. And when you have sand, you're probably going to need 2 or 3 applications per year. Look at a lot of the high yield guys that are raising crops, great crops, on pure sand with irrigation. They're putting boron on 10 times, some of them. So boron leaches, just like nitrate, just like sulfate. Boron leaches. So those are the things that I would keep in mind with the boron. And yeah, I mean, if I was you, I'd be interested in trying some boron, but I would look at everything else I got on my soil test first. Let's make sure pH is good, NPK, sulfur, all those kind of things.
Thanks for the question, Larry. I got one from Greg here. He said, I've got crabgrass and clover coming in my lawn. I'm wondering, could I just use some Husky to take care of it or maybe add some clarity to that?
Well, Husky you can use on grasses. Now, it doesn't specifically say lawns, so if you're going to consider your lawn a pasture, then I think you could. So, buck troll is no problem.
Well, you could use Drive, and it's labeled for both those weeds for lawns. That would be my solution. That's what I do at home.
Yeah, you could get if you really want to get an HPPD out there, what's the product called? Tenacity, that's generic mesotrione. So, you got options there, too.
We'll get back to more of your calls and questions right after this.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. And the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and agronomic questions. Radio at agphd.com is our email box, or you can just give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got one from Luke here. He said, you guys are talking about using HPPDs only once per season and keeping the rates down to avoid any potential carryover.
Correct.
I'm wondering, would you say 7 ounces of mesotrione is too much in a corn, wheat, soybean rotation? I've put 6 ounces on the past couple of years in split application.
Corn, wheat, soybean. So it depends on what we're going to. I'm much more worried about the meso hurting the soybeans than I am hurting the wheat. So it depends on how you're doing that. Let's just say, so I'll make this easy. If I was going to soybeans, would I put that much on? There's not a chance in the world. Now, if I farmed in Alabama in pure sand and I never froze and I get 100 inches of rainfall, would I be willing to put 6 ounces on and plant soybeans the next spring? I probably would. Where I farm, though, I mean, we just don't get enough rain. The soil is heavy. Our ground's frozen for half the year. I mean, it's just a whole different deal. So here, there's not a chance in the world I'd ever recommend that, or quite frankly, to anybody in the Midwest. No way, no how, not going to do it. In terms of going to wheat, you can, but I always tell guys this, when it comes to farming, and this is one of the things going back to when I was a young agronomist, my dad just told me this, and this has stuck with me ever since he said this. He goes, Brian, okay, you're going to be an agronomist, and you're going to make recommendations to people. He said, I want you to think about this. If you make a recommendation and you don't kill all the weeds, the guy goes and sprays whatever you tell him to, it doesn't kill all the weeds. He said, it's not the end of the world. You just go out there, spray something else, kill the rest of them. No big deal. But he said, if you ever make a recommendation and it hurts somebody's crop, now you got a problem. So like for both Darren and me, our recommendations are going to be more conservative than what you'll find on the label a lot of times. They're going to be more conservative than most people out there will recommend, because we're not just thinking about weed control and today. We're thinking about the future. We want you to not just to do well this year, but you got to do well next year and the year after that and 20 years from now. So I'm not going to recommend that going into wheat. Would it absolutely kill your wheat? No, there's no guarantee it would. For that matter, there's no guarantee it would kill your soybeans either. But it just makes me worry. It just adds risk to the whole scenario. Why do you need to? I'd put it to you this way. There are 50 other programs I can come up with for you that would do just as good at killing the weeds without having all that carryover risk. Or at least 5 for sure that I'd feel super comfortable with. But literally, I bet I could come up with 50 different programs where I could kill the weeds and I wouldn't hurt my next crop, or at least have risk to my next crop. We don't want more risk. So would I do it? No way.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Got a couple of soil tests here from Southwest India, and got a couple of questions here. We've used sulfuric acid the last couple of years. It's helped us a little bit, but our pH is still 9.58. Wondering how we can reduce this alkalinity. What about phosphoric acid? Just wondering what we could do. We aren't getting great results with the sulfur.
Well, here's what I'm looking for is sodium. Do you see sodium? Here, look at.
I didn't notice it.
Okay.
I did not notice it.
Yeah.
I looked through that too.
All right. Here's what I can tell you. Calcium can raise pH. So if you had a ridiculous amount of calcium, it could raise pH. But if it's just calcium, you're not getting to 9.5. Magnesium will raise pH roughly 1.6:1 compared to calcium. So if you had ridiculous magnesium levels, then that could be a problem too. I also don't see magnesium on here. But what's really going to raise it, and what my assumption is here, is you've got a drainage issue and you've got a sodium problem. This is most likely a sodic soil. That's about the only time I personally have ever seen pH levels that high. When you get to a 9.5 pH, I got to be honest, I'm surprised you can raise anything. So the odds are you would need drainage. Our topic today was tiling. And if we could put some drain tile in that ground, now I'd feel better. But I'd like to see a complete soil test before I go making a bunch of recommendations when I'm not certain That's the problem, but I assume it is. So I would like to see a soil test that's got magnesium, that's got sodium on there, and I'm trying to look for anything else that I'm missing here, but those are the two main things. Let's see, do we have organic matter? Organic, I'm guessing OC is organic content. So I'm guessing that's what that is, and that's 0.5. So that's not good. So I can't believe that this wouldn't be a sodium problem, but maybe it's not. But yeah, I'd just like a more complete test and then I could give you a better answer. But my guess, and that's it's strictly a guess, I'm guessing you have a drainage issue number one, you got a sodium issue number two, and how are you going to fix that? You're going to put tile in the ground, and then you're going to have to try to get something growing on there. So it means a crop that's more tolerant to high sodium levels. Barley is one of the best that I know. You might have to raise barley for a few years to get something growing out there. You might have to do some tillage. You might have to till in some straw or, you know, some bales of straw. Just till it into the ground, something to get that soil. I mean, a lot of times that soil gets hard as a rock when it's that heavy on sodium. If that's the case, then that's what we got. But I can't answer the question for sure because I don't see the results.
All right. Thanks for the question. If you want to follow us up with some additional testing, that'd be wonderful. Got a question here from Mark in Nebraska. He said, I'm wondering, you know, if soils are 95% carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, why are we spending our time soil sampling for the 5% of the macro and micronutrients? Shouldn't we be doing more of the Haney soil testing? And why are we doing grids of just macro and micronutrients?
Okay, so I'll tell you this. We've done a bunch of the soil health tests, Haney, and a bunch of the other ones. What we've found is if you follow the things that we talk about, which includes soil pH and the macro and micronutrients.
Well, and drainage.
Yes, but I mean, I can pick that up just like in his thing here. When I got a 9.5 pH, there's something wrong. And yeah, it might very well be drainage. I just don't have everything I need to get that figured out. I'm guessing it's drainage because it looks like his nitrogen levels are ridiculously high. That would leach away for sure if I had good drainage. But anyway, what we have found is if you ever come to one of our soils clinics, we put on free Ag PhD soils clinics. If you come to one of those, we'll go right through the soil test. Everything from pH, base saturation, where your levels need to be for macro and micronutrients, all those kind of things. And if you have good drainage, you do all those things, and I will promise you, you will have a good score on the Haney test or anybody else's soil health test. For a lot of those soil health tests, they get used because for the CSP program, the government needs to have something in the United States where they can say, you got to hit this number, and unless you hit this number, then you're disqualified or whatever. So it's a simple way to say yes or no. But ultimately, soil health is not about yes or no. Soil health is about a whole bunch of different factors. And what we're trying to do is raise great crops. If we ultimately raise great crops, they kick out sugars into the soil, which means we get a lot more soil life and soil health going. So we need to do everything to raise great crops. And to raise great crops, you have to have the right levels and balance in that soil of macro and micronutrients. So that's really what it comes back to. But no, I'm not a believer in the soil health tests because we've proven you don't need them if you just have good drainage and you go through your soil test from start to finish, every nutrient, and you've got things balanced out, you have ample amounts out there.
All right, thanks for the question. Appreciate that. I got one from Richard, and he said, I downloaded the fertilizer requirement app recommended by Ag PhD. That's the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app. So my question is, are the potash values recommended in actual pounds of potash or overall weight? Basically, if you took 100 pounds times 0.6, is that 60 pounds actual?
Okay, so here's what it is. I'll just give you the example. On corn, I just pulled it up and I pulled up 300 bushel corn. What it has is the third thing down. There's nitrogen, then phosphate, then potassium. It is K2O potassium levels. Okay, you need 405 pounds of K2O potassium levels. So That would mean if you wanted to, let's say I literally had zero. Now, I realize you don't. But let's say that you wanted to apply 405 pounds of K2O potassium. What would that mean? Well, you'd have to divide that number by 60. So 405 divided by 0.6. Let's see, 405 divided by 0.6 is, one more time, 405 divided by 0.6 is 675 pounds of potash you'd have to apply to get that much actual K2O potassium.
Thanks for listening to today's program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.